Hello and welcome to another episode of Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. My name is Will, and as always, I'm joined by my cousin Michael and a very special guest this week, Will Collier, King Cole. How are you getting on, mate? Thanks for joining us.
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the King Cole shout. I like that. It's nice.
Don't worry, we've got loads of nicknames. That was actually going to be one of my first questions. Is it King Cole? Is it Sparkly Eyed Man? Is it the best looking tight head in world rugby? What's the nickname you go by?
The last one's nice. It's a bit of a mouthful. King Cole is kind of Dan Cole's thing. I wouldn't want to steal that from him. I reckon he's the original King Cole. Sparkly Eyed Man's nice. We can go with Cole for now. That's probably easiest.
Cole it is.
King Collie did actually come after a very special moment on your career, which we will mention later. We won't dive into it just yet. But there's a reason for you being called the King, but I'll let Will take that one for now.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
In terms of your whole Quins career, this is where we're going to start, and we'll probably spend the first bit of the podcast talking about you. Mr. Harlequins, it's where you've been your entire career. Two premiership wins in that time. Any person we've had on the podcast previously that was involved in both, we've tried to ask them to break it down and kind of compare them and what was different about each. What's your read on it? How do they differ in terms of the season, and how do they differ in terms of that final game in which the job was done?
They differ massively for me personally, and I think for most people they'd say the same. I think the overlapping thing was the belief. There was both massive belief by the time we were going to that final that I think we all felt and knew there was this feeling that we're going to do this. That's easy to say that afterwards when you've walked away and won it, but you genuinely feel going into it, you're so full of confidence and belief. Obviously, 2012, very different circumstances. I was very different then. I was only 20, 21, I think. So just warmed the pine with Lammy and Bukes. Didn't play. But to be a part of that was incredible. And it was kind of, we'd had that unbelievable season, gone on a huge winning streak at the beginning. It all come perfectly to the boil. We'd had already won Europe the year before. We had, the all-stars, the lads you go through our team. It was unbelievable. Mm. Obviously, we had a similar team out when we won it 2021. But that having come from where we were that season, and you boys, you obviously know as well as anyone, to turn things around like we did, it was remarkable. I mean, they should make a Netflix documentary or something out of it.
100%.
I mean, it was just incredible. And it's one of those where you look back at it now, and I was thinking about it the other day because we've got Benny Tapps coming over.
Yeah,
he's one of my good mates this weekend, and boys like that who have moved on, and Baldwin, and lads in that squad who aren't here anymore. You think how special that group of people were. And it's still even now a bit like, wow, we actually went and did that. Yeah. It's still looking back, you can't quite believe when you break it down from the semi and the final, the circumstances around it all to have done it. It's something I think none of us will ever forget.
I've watched those two highlights so many times, from Bristol to the Exeter final. Honestly, I was going through a period where I was going to the gym and I hated doing cardio. So I decided to get me through cardio, I would just go and watch the 10-minute highlights on repeat. And that's how I got into it a little bit better. Pre-season was a little bit easier after that.
Perfect. Yeah, inspiring stuff.
You can't really see it on Zoom, but the state of Will's rig definitely doesn't shout cardio. He's much sort of top heavy, loves sort of the beach weights and the weights.
We'll do some gym chat later, actually.
Yeah, are we? Okay.
Can you actually remember how many games it was after your first Premiership try? Obviously, it came the season after, but can you remember the exact count after that?
What was it? I think it was 126 Premiership appearances, I think.
So I watched the clip earlier. It said on commentary that you were the longest player to ever wait to score their first Premiership try at 135 games.
125. So I think Ali Eakin actually got a bit overexcited, and that wasn't strictly true. I Googled it since. I think there's a couple of others. but to be honest, I'm happy to claim it because it's a great stat. So maybe we'll just edit that out and pretend that that's true.
One for the real rugby noses, isn't it?
Then the floodgates opened and I scored another one. So
a good time in the career. Another good time in the career. You're the last man standing in the jigsaw. A name given to the front row of Lambert Gray and yourself. Does that make you the last piece of the puzzle? What's the jigsaw? Tell us about the jigsaw.
Yeah, well, firstly, where did you hear about the jigsaw? I
The
didn't
jigsaw.
realize it was that public.
The jigsaw came out in Joe Gray's retirement video, and it was you and him sitting in the Meyer Master
Oh,
suite.
of course. Yeah,
Oh,
I forgot.
I was properly nerding out in the last couple of weeks about stuff, and I remembered that clip, and I was like, "Where have I seen that clip?" I had to go through the archives and find it. And there's that clip. I think they referenced in it you, Lambert, and Gray going away to, I think it was Toulouse, and
Yeah,
dominating a
Toulouse, wasn't
pretty
it?
big French pack at the time, and you guys walking off and going, "Bloody hell, that was pretty good."
Yeah. So it's I mean, we had a lot of great scrummers together. I mean, Lammy and Joe are both amazing scrummagers, really strong men in their own rights. But you know, we're talking about body shapes. We how can I put this kindly? We all have muffin tops, different size. I think muffin tops is the right word. Love handles, whatever you want to call them. And when you line us up to slightly different heights, they slot into each other perfectly, like a jigsaw. So you know, Grazer puts his arms up, and I'll just flop the left muffin top in. Lammy gets his big barb in, and then we just connect in.
That's
And
amazing.
it's quite hard to split it up.
How does that compare with you, Wacker, and Joe Marler?
To be fair, there's a couple of love handles and muffin tops knocking around there. It's not quite got the same density. I think Wacker's probably a little bit leaner, as is Joe. His back's so enormous that the love handles don't quite come out at his waist enough to get to Wacker. But I don't want to get too technical into scrummaging with
Yeah,
that.
we'll do a little bit more scrum chat later.
Okay.
Obviously in 2021, and obviously pretty much since then, Will and I've spoken to loads of people in the last sort of couple of years, and we speak about it quite a lot. We have both said numerous times on the podcast that we think the greatest area of strength that we've had as a squad in the last 2 or 3 years has been at Tighthead, obviously with the arrival of Wilco Lowe, and it's such a physically demanding position that having, two world class, even throw Simon Carrot in the mix, who plays on that side as well. How much have you guys sort of gelled together in the last couple of years since Wilco's here? Because obviously you guys are effectively competing for shirts, but given the strenuous task of playing in that position, what's that relationship like between you guys, and what was it like having him come in and sort of share the number three jersey?
Yeah, it's funny you said that, because I was actually thinking it the other day, how much I'm going to miss Wilco, because he's just such a great guy. And you know, I've had a lot of different competition in my career, and I've always felt like I've got on with the guy ahead of me. But I guess people would say this quite they would say that they do get on with their person who they're competing with, but it's we know we're genuinely really good mates. And both Simon and Wilco are two of the nicest blokes you will ever meet. They really, really are. So down to earth. I don't like this word, but they are very, very humble guys. Both absolute physical freaks, which is what you need, which is just another nice part of it. But they're just absolute legends. And we talk for hours about barbecuing and meat and steak and fishing with Wilco and Simon. We've got a lot of common ground. I think a lot of tight heads do. And I don't know, I think we're kind of all share similar passions, and it's funny. I guess at the beginning, maybe when Wilco and Simon came in, you're still feeling each other out, and maybe it isn't. You're obviously not quite as close, but through what we've been through as a three, and you know, the last few years, the experiences we've had together, and we've helped each other grow, I think, so much. I'm definitely a better player for Wilco coming in, and Simon. 100% the amount they both push me. So I'm really grateful to them for that. And yeah, I'm really going to miss Wilco, because I don't know if you guys know him well or have spoken to him, but I genuinely don't think you can speak to a nicer man.
We actually had a photo with him on the
Yeah, we
well,
did actually, yeah.
I was gonna say the turf, but it's the AstroTurf at the La Défense Arena last weekend, where he was, as you mentioned, very humble. So he's a good bloke off the field as well as on it, I'm sure. You
Yeah.
mentioned there a lot of off-field interests, and actually that's one of our next questions, is about side hustles and off-field hobbies that you've got. You mentioned the kind of meat world and a bit of barbecue. I'm pretty sure you've got some kind of involvement there, haven't you? What about your off-field antics?
Yeah, so mainly I'm involved with the Jolly Hog,
Still
which I don't know if you know it goes know about, but one of
iconic,
my
Will. Everyone knows about
yeah,
it.
everyone knows the
We
Jolly Hog.
love the Jolly Hog.
Yeah.
It was a
Oh
huge
shit.
travesty when they left the stoop.
Yeah, I know. I miss it. It's better for the rig and the muffin top. So maybe that's why the new jigsaw isn't quite as
Yeah, bring
compact.
it back.
But no, yeah, I got involved with that with you know Ollie Cohn's one of my best mates, and I don't know, he's a bit of a mentor. to me and what he's done in rugby and now in life after rugby, and his two brothers. I mean, the whole Cone family, they're absolute legends. And Ollie obviously started, I don't want to get too into it, we can go down the whole history, but Ollie did his ACL, I think, I can't remember the year, but I don't think the story, then his wife from a sausage maker, long story short, the Jolly Hog was born. I did my ACL in 2015, kind of thought, what the hell am I going to do? So went to Ollie with this idea of, he obviously had the concessions going at the Stoop and stuff at that time, they were going really well. I said, well, let's try and do a slightly more gourmet version of what you've been serving. And we sold nothing, but it was the funnest time ever. And we made this thing called the Banger Bar. We did it in Ace Hotel in Shoreditch, which is like incredibly nice, edgy. Yeah, incredibly been... edgy. Ollie and I were in our shorts and Birkies. They've got these like these rickety chairs, which you like all these hipsters, it's fine when they're sat on them, but us, he was literally doing ski sits. It was in the summer, it was in July. And he was just doing like ski sits on these chairs, holding his own weight, just like legs shaking, drenched in sweat. And it was in this little kiosk that serves out on Shoreditch High Street. In the day, it was a vegan smoothie place. And then we'd come in with a vat of sausages in the evening, pork everywhere, and just serve these out. Anyway, we did a couple of restaurants together off the back of that down in Bristol, which was great fun. And now I've got a bit more involved in the main group.
You can tell Will's a bit more upmarket than me, because as soon as you said the Ace Hotel in Shoreditch, you knew exactly what it was. But I had absolutely no idea.
He's edgy, isn't he? I can tell.
Yeah, well, I think he likes to think so. I think I remember Will actually sending me a photo of... I keep saying Will, there's two of you. Cousin Will sent me a photo of his pre-match breakfast the morning of the 2021 final, as he was just leaving Clapham and coming over to mine. And you'd made a Jolly Hog breakfast sandwich sat in front of your TV.
Oh, good man.
There's no better way to start the day.
Symbolic, really.
Good man.
Sticking on Quinns for now. News today, Steph Luiz re-signing. A word on him. He's been amazing for us over the last couple of years.
Absolutely immense. Incredible leader. I mean, a huge amount of us winning the Premiership that year is down to him and his leadership. Everything he did around it. Gelling the boys together, because we were left, the squad was in a really tough place, and a lot of that is down to him. He speaks his mind really openly, and that's something he's brought to all of us, is having tough conversations openly, and you don't take it personally. And he's like, you know, this physical abrasive South African, which you need, but then he has these crazy moments of absolute flair. Like I think Quinns just did a post of like, what's your favourite Steph moment? I know it's completely accidental, but it's him like, kicking over to Tyrone, Wilford Road away against Leicester, and then the interceptions and stuff. Because he's absolutely rapid, and he's a great man. And my God, we're lucky to have him sticking around with Herbs and Launchers, and obviously he can cover the back row as well. But I'm quite excited about the potential weight of the pack next year.
Oh, 100%.
Could be meaty.
Few lads so coming up behind you, the likes of Steph, Launch and Ernie's nestling behind you and Marla. We are going nowhere.
Really spoiled for choice with that, yeah.
I remember referencing his pace there. I remember that try he scored, I think it was against Gloucester.
Yeah.
Before COVID, sort of galloping down the length of the pitch and just his long rangy legs going sort of over 3 or 4 miles per step.
That's Mr. Gilmore's jacket. Arms right here.
It's genius.
That
brings back some references. But do you remember when he first came in, what he was like, sort of, obviously he wasn't in a leadership role at that stage. Do you remember what he was like when he first came in and how he's sort of transitioned into this leadership role? Because obviously we've been around for so long with, you know, the likes of Robbo, guys like Nick Easter, Joe Marler, Danny Carroll, sort of doing captaincy, even someone like Alex Donbrandt, who's doing a lot of it now, that sort of real thorough line of English players running through the squad. But having almost a South African guy leading the squad, can you remember how that transition sort of took part for him?
I mean, those kind of guys, it's really obvious. They're leaders off the bat. And I guess it took him, you know, a few months to really settle into that role. And Guzzy put all his faith in him. Credit to Guzzy for realising that those leadership qualities early on, because he is just an amazing leader. And I think it's probably his honesty, and he's so upfront with everyone and just speaks his mind, as I said. And it's one of those, when he came in, he had that already. He did have that. He was the way he spoke, and you know, he'd already be there after It's the after training, you know, when you have the little, everyone gets in the huddle and you look around and the boys say a few words. He was automatically one of those lads who puts his hand up and kind of summarizes what's happened and where we need to go next. And it becomes very quickly apparent, okay, yeah, this guy, he's a real leader.
That's mega. I think most people that we've spoken to have sort of echoed those sort of statements. And yeah, we're pretty lucky to have him. But before we move on to anything else, I'm obviously come back to you very quickly. England squad was announced a couple of weeks ago, and there's been a bit of chat around sort of Steve Borthwick about, you know, picking Dan Cole again for his scrummaging abilities. We had to chat about it last week about maybe there's a little slight, not lack of strength and depth at the tight head position, but you still get your eye on adding to a couple of England caps down the line.
Right, mate, very much so. You know, I've got huge desire to try and do that again. I'm really chuffed for the original King Cole because, I mean, he's been getting a lot of credit recently, and rightly so, because he's just absolutely immense what he's done over the years. He's an absolute grafter, complete workhorse, and he's getting a lot of plaudits at the moment, but sometimes I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. But for me, I'm happy that Borthers is looking at scrummaging tight heads again. And, you know, I think that's really positive, and hopefully I can find similar form to what happened last year and get back into the Quins team and, you know, pick up the same momentum, and the rest will take care of itself, hopefully. But, you know, I've got huge desire. That's definitely one of my goals to get back in the mix. And this injury has been a bit annoying timing-wise. I haven't left myself much opportunity, but I'm going to come back in as best shape as I can, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's really refreshing, isn't it, to see Borthwick picking on performance. And obviously there's this new crop of young talent coming through, but you can't beat a player playing at the top of their game, regardless of how long they've been around and whether they've been in and out of the squad before. So refreshing to see that. And hopefully we see you back in there as well. We'd love nothing more. On the
Yeah, cheers,
subject of
Will.
scrummaging, scale of 1 to 10, how much do you love
It's an easy 10. I mean, easy 10.
it?
I really
Who's the
do.
toughest scrummager you've come up against?
It's a really tough question that. I get asked it quite a bit, and my default answer is probably Marcus Ayerza. He's
Okay. God, that was a good era,
notoriously
wasn't it?
incredible. I mean, unbelievable. I think he's definitely one of the best scrummaging loose heads ever, I think. If you ask a lot of elite tight heads around the world, they put him right up there. I certainly would. I know Adam Jones would as well. He was so freakishly strong and so consistent. It's just when you hit a guy, you know they're not moving. His back is just like, it's actually kind of similar to Marlon's, just like huge thick back. And I was young at the time when I was playing against him, and it's one of those moments when you go down and you're just thinking, oh my God, that's Marcus Ayerza, and I've just seen you eating props alive for the last decade in the Premiership. I'm just gonna hold my breath and pray. But he's definitely up there. There's plenty, you know, a few other lads knocking around the Premiership who I've had good tussles with over the years as well. People like Ben Moon, I've got a lot of respect for him.
Oh, interesting.
He's, you know, I thought I'd talk about Dan Cole not getting the credit he deserves. I think Ben's up there as well. He's an immense scrummager because he's not, you know, he's not a big, he's
No.
not big at all, but he's really strong and gritty, and he's just got that fight. I think when you get in the scrum, he's not going to give up.
Did Marcus Ayerza become easier or more difficult to scrum against after him and Marla were filling each other in on in that Premiership game a few years ago?
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? With Joe's
With
ridiculous
Joe's
hair. What an era of rugby that was.
ridiculous like red mullet and sausage written on the side of his head.
He had the Jolly Hog sausages on his head, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was the same season, but that might have been later on, because that was at home when they had the scrap, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I've watched that video a lot.
And then the Jolly Hog and sausage was in the big game,
That was it.
because he hidden it and then he took it off. And
Oh,
then
really? Amazing.
obviously Ollie Cohen had, like, you know, he'd been the puppet master kind of behind it all. And then I think in the first ruck, Ollie flew into Joe's side of his head and cut it. So Joe had to wear a scrum. He had to wear a scrum out for the rest of the game, so you couldn't see it.
Vivid.
Yeah, but that was great, wasn't it, when Marcus and Joe went at it? I think it was very tactical from Joe before.
That's
He's like,
quite
all
ca
right.
that screams
He's
Marla, doesn't
ducking.
it? Calculated a
Yeah,
lot of
yeah,
the
yeah.
time. He's a
Calculated
smart.
risk.
He's a very
smart guy. He'd have planned it.
Yeah. You've mentioned your youth as a prop, and I imagine being a young prop in the Premiership in any era is not easy. We've seen Finn Baxter switch sides and come through in recent weeks. How closely have you worked with him, and what's it like to be training with him every day in the scrum?
Yes, brilliant. annoyingly, I haven't been as involved in the last kind of month or so as he's really had a couple of breakthrough games. But last year, especially seeing him transition across from tight head, which is quite a hard thing to do, and huge credit to Bomb on realizing that's probably going to be the area for him to properly kick on. I mean, he's got a huge future ahead of him, I think. I really do. And very, very different characters to Marlon. I think it's quite obvious. But I
He's
can,
so friendly, isn't he?
he's so nice. I can see him filling when Joe eventually does in probably 20 years' time step away. I reckon Finn will fill those shoes.
What was your excitement like? You mentioned Bomb there. When Bomb signed as scrum coach, obviously, arguably the greatest tight head the Northern Hemisphere has seen in the last 15 years or so. When he first came to the club, what was that like for you?
Really surreal because I was a huge fan. I don't know if I've probably spoken to Bomb about this, but I was just a massive fan of his. And at that time it was me, Sinks, and him. And Connor brought Bomb in, I think, to try and help us develop. And also, he obviously played a lot. He was right at the end of his career. And we just learned a hell of a lot. We just soaked it up. It was kind of one of those where you're like, oh, he's going to probably play a few of the big matches ahead of me. But I'm still young and I'm just going to learn so much from this guy. And the great thing about Bomb is it's not just the scrummaging stuff. It's not just here's a technical bit of knowledge. It's his knowledge like around the whole game and off the pitch and the way you're handling yourself, the way you hold yourself, the way you approach a match, approach training. Because he's a really tough man, Bomb. He's a tough grafter and he's a really hard trainer. He punishes himself in the gym, and he was actually really, really fit, like deceptively fit bloke. And he's definitely helped me in those kind of parts of my game.
Yeah, mega.
We'll stick in the realms of the front row, and we'll move on to some more light-hearted questions before we finish up with the game. We've done toughest scrummaging opponent. We want to talk a little bit more about the gym and the life of a tight head prop and what training is like. Talk to us about your squat game. How much is your typical squat, and what's your PB?
Yeah, squat. So squatting's that's my lift. That's my thing.
What is it?
I
Bread
thought
and
it might
butter.
be.
I thought it might be.
I did. What was I doing last year? I did 260 a couple of times last year.
Fucking hell. I did
How
that for
much do you weigh,
reps.
Cole? I'm 120 at the moment.
20.
I do 260 for reps.
On the bench.
On the row machine, just one, two, three.
But I think squatting as a tight head is the most important lift. It's the key lift, and they tend to be strongest in that area. And I got a bit carried away. I got a bit excited about last year. It was just something that I was consistently doing every week was these heavy squats. And I want to join the 300 club at some point. I think I
Oh,
was kind of
yes.
I was brushing around 280. I did like a few. There's a predicted 1 RM thing in the gym, and I think if I did like 5 or 6 reps on a slightly lighter weight, which then predicts me being up there. So I could kind of claim it, but I'm not until I've physically done it and got a video.
How's the injury tracking? Because that must be part of your recovery, surely. Bit by bit, get a few more plates on the squat rack.
It's great to be honest. I mean, obviously it was a really, really frustrating injury because really innocuous at the time. In a scrum, just kind of pushed off a movement I've done thousands of times. Felt this little thing. Oh crap, when you can tell something's decent. And turned out to be a really decent injury, and I think it had the potential to be quite a long one. I'm not going to say anything until I'm properly back, but we're not too far away now, to be honest. And I'll definitely be back before the end of the season, and maybe kind of in the next month or two. So we're in a good place. I'm back training kind of properly. Hopefully, be in with the lads in the next week or two. Did a few scrums today. Squatting's coming back to where I want it
Scrum
to be.
today. Here he is. He's back. No wonder he's
Careful.
smiling so much. Scrummaging
Really
again.
happy. The ears are on fire. I'm loving it.
What's your daily calorie intake like as a front row forward? People love these sorts of questions because everyone makes themselves a bit of a gym rat, sort of food tracker. But how many are you putting away in a normal day?
It's not mad. I've got 3.5, 4, 4,000. But when on a training day, maybe 4,000. But when James Johnson left the club in, I don't know if it was 2014 or something, John Kingston was like, right, well, you need to be the next JJ. I was about 118 kegs. JJ was 150. And like JK was like to get his time up initial. So how long is it going to take Will to get to that weight? And Tommy was like, mate, that's physically impossible. He's like, well, we got to try. So I was on over 5,000 a day.
Wow.
Just ballooned. I got up to kind of like 126, 128 or something. I was so enormous. It felt horrible. scrummaging was great, but then they were like, why isn't Cole running around the pitch?
Yeah.
What do you expect?
What's not meant to tackle in 2 weeks? I can't move.
Yeah.
For context, the average man is 2,500 calories. So you're adding an extra 1,000, 1,500 onto that. Here's one that we like to ask.
What's your favourite ever away day with Quins?
Favourite ever away day? Wow.
One domestic, one European.
Yeah, that's okay. Fair, because I wouldn't be able to choose.
Okay. I love playing in Welford Road.
Nice.
I absolutely love it. The old school changing rooms, you're on the bench, everything about it. You walk down through those steps.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
they come into like Smoke on the Water or whatever. Dun, dun, dun. You've got the huge stadium in front of you. I think that's, for me, the best place. And there's a really good fish and chip shop. Well, I don't know if it's really good, but it feels really good after a match.
Yeah.
And it's just opposite where we leave from. So get a big chippy afterwards. Bus. That would be domestic. What would be the favourite? Another one that springs to mind, we lost the match, but we had a great time and a great day, was in some of these bigger European away trips, we've had immense, amazing ones. All over the place. I mean, we did America, played against the USA. That was incredible. That was a week, yeah. So I'm not going to count that. I'm going to stick with Europe. Probably Stade Moyal, Toulon away.
Ah.
We got absolutely drilled. They had like an all-star team. Johnny was playing.
Is this 2011? Because I was there.
Yeah. When George Robson fell over in the tunnel.
Which
is what makes it probably just edges maybe like playing in Clermont or one of the other big French arenas.
I'd forgotten about George Robson falling over in the tunnel. That kind of set the tone, really, didn't it?
It was amazing. We had a great night out afterwards. You should go back and watch the video and then look at George Lowe and Danny just in hysterics as he falls over.
Of course, Harlequins have got a very good away record. And yo, George Robson, the first error of the night. Very slippery on those marble floors here in Toulon.
I was right there, so I saw it. It took the edge off playing against like Johnny and Carl Heyman. Yeah, so all those boys.
Gosh, yeah, they were an all-star team, weren't they? We're going to finish off with a mini game. It's a classic. It's Would You Rather. I've got a couple of questions for Mike and I've got a couple of questions for you. I'm actually going to kick off with Mike. Would you rather scrum against Collier or would you rather be defending him for that dummy against Bristol?
Oh,
yeah.
And I'm 6'5", I've got long legs, but the speed you were going at, Will, was something special. I'm not sure I'd catch you. But
it's not about the speed, mate. It was about the step and the dummy.
Yeah.
See, Danny just jogging alongside me, laughing, like walking backwards.
I don't know. I actually had a bit of a ritual about lasting for a year. Got canned because of COVID, because I wasn't allowed to do it anymore. But me and my mate would play hockey, and we'd go down onto like a little sort of semi scrum and like stretch the hammies and the glutes out before a game of hockey. We stopped doing it because of COVID, and he plays in a different team now. So
don't tell me you're about to fancy yourself in a scrum.
No, absolutely not. I'll get my ass put through my ears. but yeah, I think I'd go and sort of try and turn and chase back and sort of helplessly put out a finger and try and tap you over, because I wasn't going to get my chin up by your boots and sort of get hit in the face.
It's a question of what's going to humiliate you the least, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think I know the answer.
How many times have you watched that clip back, Cole?
Probably triple figures now.
I think.
Wow, really?
No, I don't know.
That's where King Collier came from for me.
Yeah, that's King Collier.
It was always King Carlos, and I thought, that's boring. We've got King Collier in the Quinn side. That's where it came from.
To be honest, I really enjoy the comms, because I mentioned Ali Eakin earlier. We're on a WhatsApp group together. We did a trip away in Bermuda with a few lads. It was like an amazing trip. So I got to know him quite well. And he called me out on that group before the match. Being like, and it's a fun group. We've got like Ellis Jenkins, Gareth Anscombe, Lambert. It's good. It's like a good bunch of boys. And he's like, Cole, what the hell's going on, mate? I was obviously checking his stats before the match. He's like, you've never scored in a Premiership game. You really need to sort this out. And I was like, yeah, I'll see what I can do tonight. Obviously,
no.
It's nowhere it's going to happen. No so way. As it kind of unfolded, but that's why it was so funny. I think he was a bit in shock.
Yeah.
But that one was kind of, it was kind of for him. Collier Corner, they're calling it apparently now.
Yeah. Right, we'll do one more would you rather question for you, King Cole. Would you rather live 2012 over again, or would you rather live 2021 over again? And it's probably the impossible question, but we're going to end on that one, so take your time.
No, it's for me, it's 21.
Is it?
It's 21, yeah. It was so special.
It's a Netflix series in the making.
Yeah, the whole thing, mate. The semi-final in itself, like, yeah. That was just ridiculous. And I don't know, because obviously, I think 2012, one of the huge parts of the day everyone always talks about is the walkover. And in 2012, I feel like that walkover, it was kind of the first time we experienced it properly. And to have, you know, it's like 4, 5, 6 people deep on each side. There's so many, like thousands of fans. Mm. And just soaking it all in. And I was so young at the time. And then having it again when we won the Premiership, the whole experience, the walkover, that bunch of boys. I'm still going. I'm going 21.
I was there for both.
Yeah, that's always, he's always got that.
Oh, that's
me.
Nice.
He always got that over me. So he was there for both, and I was only there for 21. Although
I've actually got it tattooed on my arm as well.
What does it say?
It's I tried to make it a little bit cooler. It's just it's the day in Roman numerals.
What do you mean you've got it tattooed on my arm? You pestered me for a year, and I've also got it on my foot.
That's great.
June the 26th, 2021.
Right,
love it.
Because he's a bit more edgy than me, as we've alluded to already. He's got some funky looking eagle on his wrist and a little arrow on his thumb and some Fijian thing on his foot. So he gets this one. And I shared a room with him on Saturday night in Paris. I've seen him all a couple of times now. They're all very, very cool. Good for him. He pestered me for a year about getting it. And I eventually gave in and went to Fulham Inc., which I know where Danny gets his done. So I've got the same thing on my foot, just out of the way.
Look, we'll wrap it up there. So thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us. It's been a real pleasure for both of us to be able to sit down and speak to you. It's been a long old day at work, and I couldn't think of anything better than being sat here on a Thursday evening chatting to you. So thank you for giving us your time. We can't wait to see you back out on the park, and hopefully we see you on Saturday for a big game.
Yeah, cheers, boys. It was great fun. Thanks for having me. I'll see you on Saturday.
Moving on into part two of Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. Let's recap on some news from the week. The first place I want to start is in our recruitment. This week, we announced that we have just signed Will Porter from Bristol Bears, previously of Wasps. Don't know too much about him, but from what I've read on the sentiment on Twitter is that it's a very, very good signing. A few Wasps accounts have been saying that it's a great bit of business from Quins. A few Bears fans are saying they're going to miss him. Haven't seen too much of him apart from his sort of little clever sniping tries when teams are looking to kick it out box kick style from their own try line and he dives over and scores. So he's got a good rugby brain about him, knows the laws well. But aside from that, not seen too much. What are your thoughts on that, Michael?
Jury will be out until we see him play. We spoke about it during the week, didn't we? We said that, you know, in the last couple of years, obviously given now that Danny has re-signed, we are still looking for the heir to the Danny Care throne, aren't we? We haven't quite found it yet. Good to see Scott Steele back in the mix. I'll talk about the game in a bit, but yeah, we're just, you know, we almost think we've found the heir to the Joe Marler throne, haven't we, in Finn Baxter. We need that next one to fill Danny's shoes. Is it going to be Will Porter? I don't know. I don't know enough about him to make a really sort of informed assessment. I've seen a couple of clips on Twitter. I've seen the threads that you've seen saying, people are saying, you know, good signing, you know, smart signing, fits the DNA, that sort of thing. But again, I just don't know. Is he going to be the next incumbent nine at Harlequins for the next 10 years? I don't know if that's the case. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's excellent, but I'm just not too sure at the minute.
Yeah, well, we'll find out. I feel good about it. I feel like it's a recruitment in the right position. So it's good to see that we're not the only people that see it that way. The fans aren't the only people that see it that way. The club have obviously identified it. It does make our scrum half stable quite large. And obviously that drop off in quality between starter Danny Care and then the remainder is so significant. I don't think Porter will come in next season and immediately be the answer. He's going to need time. He's still young. I think he's 22, 23 years old. If he's going to be the successor to Danny, then he'll need a bit of time. And fortunately, Danny's still playing incredibly well and he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So he'll get a good season or two playing with him and maybe there'll be a passing of the torch. But as you referenced there, Scott Steele had a great game at the weekend when he came on and offers us something a little bit different. That turnover that he poached in the bottom right-hand corner to disrupt the Sharks was just magnificent, back row-esque. Will Evans would have been proud of that one. So I'm feeling slightly more confident in the nine department now, knowing that Stelko's returned, Danny's still on red-hot form, and we've recruited some fresh blood to try and ignite a bit of spark as well. So welcome to the club, Will Porter. Moving on, DC350. Greatest player to ever play for Harlequins.
Wow. I saw Marla on his Instagram yesterday put, Steph or Marla put something like the ultimate Harlequin or something when they reposted the...
Well, Marla called him the GOAT, so maybe it was Steph that said that.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate Harlequin, but yeah.
He is really, isn't he? I think it was Marcus that said he epitomises everything about Harlequins. Plays with a smile on his face. He's cheeky. He's fun. He's electric ball in hand. He scored the most outrageous dummy try this weekend. He has still got it. He's still going at what, 36 years old?
36, yeah.
He's mustered. He's still on the fringes of England at 36 years old. It's freakish. And the things he's achieved with the club, two premiership titles. There's only a few people in the club that can say they've done that. He's also won the European Challenge Cup. Who knows what they could do this year? Who knows? That was a convincing, dominant display against the Sharks, one of the best teams in the competition, littered with Springboks, the cleaners. So who knows how many more Danny can add to that accolade list before his time is up. But a word on him, what a man.
It was pretty special watching him run out with his three kids yesterday, wasn't it? That was a cool moment. Especially the week before where he took one of the young girls onto the pitch and sort of lifted her over the whitewash so that she didn't get a nice white trainers on clean. You can't say anything more about Danny. I think the South Stand's got to be renamed the Danny Care Stand.
Agree.
I think he is the epitome of a Harlequin, isn't he? And that's, I think, the biggest compliment you can pay him. He's the beating heart of everything that we do as a rugby team on the pitch. He is just so good, and he has been for such a long period of time, and he's still going and still got time left in the tank. Who knows how long he'll play for?
I think you're right. It is the Danny Care South Stand, isn't it? Forget the London Pride South Stand. The London Pride South Stand, they don't even sell London Pride in the Robshaw bar. So that's one of the worst sponsorship deals to have ever come into fruition. It's not worked, has it? Yeah. And both bars are taken. Robshaw, Brownie. I think it's right. Also, it's quite a loud kind of rocker stand.
Yeah.
Kind of fits him, doesn't it? The Danny 100%. Care South Stand. That would be iconic.
100%.
You've got the Jason Leonard gate. You've got the Adrian Stoop.
Yeah.
All these icons and legends of the club cement Danny Care in that as well.
Definitely.
One more thing on Danny Care, 350 appearances. Could he breach 400?
Jesus.
It's 50 games. It's probably about two more seasons.
What's he going to get between now and the end of the year? Another 7 or 8 games? Is that what it got left in the end of the year?
With a TBC on Europe?
With a TBC on Europe. Playoffs, probably get another 10 games in this year, I'd imagine.
Yeah, potentially. Like yeah, I'm sure he'll get rested for one or two. But I mean, for argument's sake, throw in another 10, take him to 360 by the end of the season. He needs 40. Probably got two more seasons in him. I think he's on this current 1 year renewal deal, isn't he? Every year, it's just one more year.
Yeah. I think he could probably get
less appearances over the next couple of seasons with all these new signings of Porter and Scott Steele coming back. But that's fine. Manage his tank, prolong his career. 400 out of the question. He's also got his eye on the try list, hasn't he?
Yeah. I don't think 400 is out of the question. I don't think it is.
That would be epic, wouldn't it? Oh my God, 400 appearances for Harlequins. That is like...
That's mega, isn't it? That's longevity at the top level that is pretty difficult to match. Yeah, that's incredible.
Well, we'll move on to the game because it wasn't his finest of his 350 appearances, but he did manage to bag a try and he did dictate play well. We'll start with the opening minutes, really, where were we shell-shocked? No, I don't think so. I just think they executed a pretty special try. Brilliant move and got the luck of a bounce and scored one of the most special tries of the weekend. At that point, I'm thinking that's probably try of the day, but lo and behold, as the 80 minutes surpassed, there were a couple better ones by the mighty Quins. But yeah, the fullback, who I thought was a bit of a problem all day, pokes in a lovely kick behind, gathered by the left wing, who was also a bit of a problem for us throughout the day.
Abrahams.
He's a bit Colby of a player. Yeah, a bit of Chesson Colby. Bit of a theme for short left wingers wearing scrum caps in South Africa, isn't there? But yeah, he gathers it, offloads it inside to Am, and he's shown a fresh pair of clean heels to our boys. And it was a lovely, lovely score. I think a few of us were applauding it as well. Sometimes you just got to hold your hands up and say, look, luck of a bounce, bit of skill, solid score from the Sharks.
Yeah, it was a pretty special try, wasn't it? Sometimes those things you just can't quite defend. Like, they do well to sort of drift to the outside and the kick comes in. You think, okay, that's... You know, you've got to have a bit of a lucky bounce for it to sort of sit up as it did. And unfortunately, it gets right into his hands and then he, you know, shifts it right to Lekwanyo Am, who probably for a period of time was the best player in the world. And he's not going to, you know, he's going to walk over from there, isn't he? So, yeah, a little bit of a shell shock. A little bit
Sets the tone nicely, though, doesn't it? Beautiful blue sky. I don't think there was a cloud in the sky. No. Glorious sunshine. Very sort of chilly and frosty. Perfect rugby conditions. Perfect for throwing the ball around. Not conditions that we've had since our indoor game in Paris, obviously the week before, but prior to that, for over a month, had a good feeling in the air. It had a feeling of a bit of jouet.
Yeah, a little bit.
And that try kind of set the tone, and no more than 5 minutes later, make a barreling run down the left-hand side. We cut through. There's a ruck in front of the sticks. Danny Kerr does what Danny Kerr does on his 350th appearance. It was kind of scripted, wasn't it? Throws a big old dummy straight through. There he is in front of the south stand. Not much of a celebration.
Well, I think the boys got around him pretty quickly, though, didn't they?
Yeah, of course they did.
Marcus comes straight in onto his back. Yeah, I was expecting a big sort of point up to the stand. I did actually see him point over to the Charles Stanley stand with a bit of a sort of point up there, so I assume that's where his family was sitting.
Yeah. Would have been nice if he put the old arms outstretched, gladiator, you're not entertained? Yeah. Like he'd done previously. That's what I love about Danny. He's a showman, isn't he? So that's why he's Mr. Harlequins. But not long after that, just a matter of minutes, we have a line out on halfway. Line out operated brilliantly again, I must say. It's incredible, really, how much difference one player makes. I also thought Jack Walker had a good game, and that was probably epitomised by the line out. But off the line out, first phase ball, Andre chucks it up through the midfield, carries three with him, makes about 5 to 10 yards, good groundage. Very, very quick ruck. The ruck speed was ridiculous. We get it out wide. Nick David hits a clean break inside to Dommers, and he gives it the two-handed fist pump right in front of us in the south stand. There's nothing that gets me more excited than a two-handed fist pump.
There's a couple of players in the squad that when they start giving it beans to the crowd, everyone sort of jumps on it. Yeah. Don Brown is one. Will Evans is the other.
Yeah.
Marcus in there as well.
Yeah.
They've just got that like look in their eye. You said it at the time. When Domers wants it, you can tell because he's giving it the big old double fist, hands pumping.
I love it when Domers wants it. I love it.
Yeah.
And it lifts me, it lifts the crowd. But also, you know, when Domers wants it, any single team talk he's giving, the other 14 lads on the pitch are going to want it as well. At that point, I'm feeling good because we've cut them open relatively easily. It's still early days. We're going at a point a minute, really. If anything, we're ahead of it at that stage. Right up until the 20th minute, we're at a point a minute because the next score after the penalty from Sharks was Caden Murley. And this is off a nice move as well, where we saw Bassett pop up in the midfield a little bit more, which is, I think, a good way of using him. We don't tend to use our wingers in that space too much, but he comes in on hard lines, manages to bust the first tackle, gets it out wide, and Caden gets put in by Nick David in the easiest try I'll ever score.
I think you're right about Bassett. There was a couple of times during the game yesterday where he came off that short inside line. He's a bit of a sort of bigger, rangier type winger.
Do you remember that tap and go?
Yeah.
That was interesting, wasn't it? That was good fun.
And it was a bit of a sort of Leinster sort of set play, the way they do it. But yeah, there was a couple of phases as well during the first 15-20 where the ball actually didn't quite go to hand, but Marcus just with the most delicate piece of handling to keep the ball moving. And it was almost the same in those first couple of tries, especially the one with Caden finishing in the corner after Bassett makes a bit of a punch, the ball goes through the hands and Caden just walks in and sort of loops around a little bit and nicks a few extra yards for the kick. And yeah, we're feeling good there, aren't we?
Oh, we certainly are. Yeah, we're 21-8 up and we're looking very good value for our lead. Bar the little blip in the first couple of minutes for an outstanding score, they've not really fired a shot. And what would happen in the latter stages of the half is two tries that I would say were relatively soft to give away. So the scrum half, Hendricks, his try was from a bump on Danny on the halfway line. They make a nice clean break of about 20 metres before offloading it to the nine to finish the job in the corner. Just a simple missed tackle, creating a bit of chaos and then finishing the job. They're a good team. They're likely to do that. And then Barra Marcus Smith penalty. The other score of the half was Etzebeth poaching it from Danny Kerr's toes and running it in untouched. And you just feel those two tries were a little bit soft. And all of a sudden, we're 2 points up at half time when they've only really fired one shot.
Yeah, the Etzebeth one was interesting, wasn't it? Because having gone back and watched it. Yeah, a little bit. Well, having gone back and watched it, and I've seen Jerry come out on Twitter this morning saying that he wanted it to be officiated in a different way, or at least told that's how they were going to officiate it. We obviously found out afterwards, because I think your old man was texting you saying that it was because Marla wasn't bound, it wasn't because the ball was out.
Yeah.
A few idiosyncrasies in there, which, you know, we won't dwell on too much, we're not referees, but the thing that just left a bit of a sad taste in my mouth about it was because there was a warning shot. He did it, did it about 10 minutes early. Fortunately, he sort of dropped the ball as he went to go and gather it, which... You know, there should have been a bit of a there should have been some writing on the wall there. Unfortunately, we didn't quite clock onto it, and at the second time of asking, he goes and gets the score.
Absolutely, but you talk about rugby IQ, Etzebeth. I think in terms of dominance at set piece, there was none. We had a brilliant game at smothering their mauls, and we competed well at lineouts. We even stole one at one point thanks to Steph.
Yeah,
but Etzebeth didn't really take us to the cleaners in the way he does against so many opponents, but his rugby IQ, just to give them an extra 7 points there, ridiculous. I'd love to see kind of every single player in our team really think about what are the levels of rugby IQ that I can just add to my game, and that would be one of them I'd expect from a Dino or a Steph, to just try and think about, right, how can I manipulate ruck situations a bit better and contact situations to try and give the team an advantage.
Maybe that's something that Danny Wilson lad when he comes in.
Yeah. Well, not long after that, after the game restarts, probably within the first couple of minutes, Steph Louise does actually finish a score.
Yeah. And this one is interesting because, having watched it back on the highlights, obviously it's right down in the other opposite far corner to where we sit. So it just sort of happened. Like, you see the sort of line out and the driving ball, you expect it to sort of slowly creep forward. And he just sort of came through the middle of the pack and scored in the corner. And actually, having watched it on the replay, I think Delalio makes a good point. It's almost Etzebeth's own fault. It's almost his own strength, because he drives through the centre of the line out, or drives through the centre of the driving mall, I should say.
Splits it,
splinters it, but sort of doesn't quite get his line right. So the ball ends up being on the other side, and Steph just wheels off and scores in the corner.
That's what I like about Steph as well. Like, presence of mind to know where he is on the pitch and still get it over, because it was right in the corner. Couldn't really see much where we were sat, could we? But the highlights showed how good it was.
And a full 80 for Steph as well.
Yeah.
That's good to see, isn't it?
Yeah, when I saw Ernie going off, I was thinking, Christ, he's been down once already, Steph. I know it wasn't anything to do with his knees or his hamstrings this time. It was more of a head look. But when Steph goes down, I'm thinking, is he really going to go full 80? And he did. So that's positive to see, especially with the run we've got coming up now without our internationals, to have your captain back and hopefully able to go 80 minutes every week. Real positive sign. Yeah,
100%.
It was a humdinger as well, wasn't it? Proper contest, this. Tries all over. Free-flowing. The next score, after a little bit of pressure, the game's in the balance. At this point, we're 29-22 up. The Sharks are putting pressure on us. They've just poked a kick through on our 22. David gathers it reasonably quickly. He was quite close to where the kick came in. Makes a little dart, pokes it through, gathers it, goes 80 metres and dots down. And at that point, he gives us a bit of breathing space. It's one of the best tries of the day, if not the best try of the day.
Not as well executed as everything else, but what of David? What of this? What adventure! He's being chased by a horde of sharks, but David's the quickest. He's the quickest fish in the sea. And Quinn's beginning to pull away with this.
And the stand is euphoric. I remember the hugs going on around us. There was actually a word on the Sharks fans. I would say they travelled well. Most of them live in Wandsworth, but mini Cape Town. But there was at least 1,000 Sharks fans there, I'd say. Really good numbers. Yeah. Flags, South African flags, Sharks flags. And they all stayed behind at the end. We'll talk about this later, because it is really quite magical from a rugby perspective. But they travelled well. They made a good amount of noise, and there were quite a lot around us. Whenever they cheered for a penalty and we cheered back, just kind of classic rugby chat, really, that is sort of non-aggressive, but quite sort of poking fun at each other.
Especially because every time there's a penalty or a scrum or a line out or anything that goes in our favour, there's a group of about six or seven runs. We were straight up on our feet with a massive sort of...
Well, it was nice to have less penalties against us this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
That always helped. And also, there was a few big shots that they liked to cheer. And we put a fair few big shots of our own, didn't we? I think there was one from Finn Baxter towards the end of the game. And Ernie did one earlier in the second half as well. That was enjoyable to watch. But anyway, we digress. That Nick David try, a couple words on that.
We said it together at this ground, and other people have said the same thing on WhatsApp groups that we're in sort of subsequently. Coming of age for Nick David, I think.
He's been good the last few weeks. He's had a man of the match. But I
bit
agree.
Bit of a breakout, though. Bit of a breakout for him. He was excellent. I think he dropped a couple in the first half off the high balls. Tough ones, because you know they're excellent kicks, and they're well competed. They sort of arrive at the time that he's jumping and landing, you know, ones that you don't expect to take, the ones that you're pleased when they do. But yeah, that try was special, really, really special. Plus, he gets the try assist for Dom Brandt on the inside for the second try. He was involved all over the pitch. Gets the he was in the line when the ball going through the hands when Caden finishes in the corner for our third. But yeah, he was excellent, Nick David, yesterday, and that try was something special, wasn't it? Because when he sticks it on the boot, I'm not quite sure what he's thinking, because it almost looks like there is a gap available there for him to run through. But I suppose he's just thinking, if I haven't got the ball in my hands, they can't tackle me. So just nudges it 10 yards and it sits up beautifully for him, and then just shows him a clean pair of heels and dots down in front of the North Stand. It was a brilliant try.
Well, it was an important try for us. That was our last try of the game in the 51st minute. So the last half an hour. It was, yeah, it was. The last half an hour. Well, after that, in the next 15 minutes, there's a whole host of substitutes. You've got some big names going off. Bassett comes off, Marla comes off, Wilco comes off, Ernie comes off. They make a whole host of substitutions as well. There's 15 minutes of no scores. And then we get a penalty right in front and we take the three, which was very wise, just to stretch just ahead of two scores. And then there's another whole host of substitutions. Some more big, big calls. Danny Kerr comes off in the 70th minute. Will Evans is a couple minutes later. Jack Walker a couple minutes after that as well. Some huge substitutions to make. And the last score of the game was Shree Fassi.
Yeah. Felt a little bit nervous at that stage, I think.
I don't know. Prior to the penalty. Yeah.
The game was done, but the moment I knew we'd won it was Scott Steele's turnover in the corner.
That was epic. That was like celebrating a try, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A word on the defence, because I think the defence was epic. Some big shots going in. We managed their attack in the backs very, very well, sort of marshalling them out to the flank and kind of drift defence. It all went really, really well. But they still scored 29 points and got a bonus point. I think two of those tries we'll call as blips. A few anomalies in there with the Exibus score and just a missed tackle on the halfway line from Danny. But 39-29 flatters them, doesn't it?
I'm not sure that it does, you know. I think for long periods of the game, we defended superbly. I think we defended the sort of middle channels of the pitch really well. There were a couple of occasions, especially when Abraham's got the ball, when he had that big sort of left foot explosive step that, you know, is difficult to defend for anybody. But I think for long periods of the game, we defended brilliantly. But with a side like that, they've got world-class talent all over the park, you know, forwards and backs on either side, World Cup winners, they're going to score tries at some point, aren't they? Especially the way that we play. We're not some tight, oiled defensive unit, are we? We are getting better, but we're not the frugal, you're not going to score against this sort of side. We're often going to outscore you, which is exactly what we did. So actually, I think, yes, we defended brilliantly. We defended brilliantly for long periods of time. Especially there were some phases in that period, probably with the last 20 minutes to go, where there's a lot of tackles, a lot of rucks, a lot of phases in the sort of middle of the pitch. And they looked like they might have run out of ideas. A couple of kicks went astray. So, you know, I think we did really well for long periods of time, but you're never going to keep sides like that quiet, especially because we're not, like I say, we're not a really, really, really highly tuned defensive machine. We're sort of a bit the other way.
I'm excited to see what Jerry can do when he gets his teeth stuck into it solely.
Yeah, that's a good
point. It was so good. And if you can eradicate the two mistakes in terms of the missed tackle in the midfield, there'll always be missed tackles, but we had half the pitch to scramble defence and recover it, and we weren't quite able to do that. And then the Exibeth one's just kind of like a bit of rugby IQ that earned them their points. Eradicate those two moments from the game, and that feels like the right scoreline to me. But very, very happy of where we are. We got exactly what we set out for. We got 5 points. We've qualified for the last 16. We've tried doing a little bit of maths, and this is where I would quite like the Champions Cup website to have a live table so you can kind of see in real time who you might be up against. We'll leave it there for the Sharks review. A couple of other games to call out this weekend. The under-18s played away against Bath in their league on Saturday. Haven't been able to find the results anywhere. There's nothing on Twitter from either club. There's nothing on either club's website. And there's nothing on the Premiership website. But the under-18s were going very, very well in their league. They've put dominant displays on all of their previous games so far. So fingers crossed they got a result. We'll be looking out for it this week. And Harlequins women are at home in a top-of-the-table clash against Gloucester Hartbury today. We wish them all the luck in the world. And hopefully when we're sat here listening to this tomorrow, we're looking at a big scalp over the top of the league side and we start climbing that table even further. Continuing to look ahead, next weekend we're back in the Premiership. We're away at London Irish, our second home. How are you previewing that?
Our second home.
They may as well rename it the Danny Kerr Stadium or something if we can't name our stadium after him.
It'd be a tough trip, especially without Marcus, Dommers, et cetera, without the England lads, but I feel good. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Should be really good. And it's obviously a very winnable game and a very important game. Having had a bit of a blip in the league in the last, 6 weeks maybe, from big game to Sale to Northampton, we wanted that break in Europe. We've had a brilliant trip out to Racing where we did brilliantly. We've had an excellent win against the Sharks. Momentum's back. Irish is now huge in terms of the league, in terms of that top three, top four spot. This is a big game on Sunday.
Huge game. We, of course, lose our England internationals, so we won't have the likes of Jack Walker, Alex Dombrandt, Marcus Smith, Caden Murley, or Joe Marchant. Five key players in our team, but we will still keep hold of Tommy Allen because it's not the official window for Italy to be able to call their players away from us, which is good. Tommy will probably start at 10 for me on that basis. 13, I'd probably bring in Oscar Beard.
Yeah, I'd go with Beard as well at 13, I think. He's been in this. I mean, somebody mentioned the prospects of Lennox at 13, but I think Beard's been in and around the squad now for the last 3 or 4 weeks and has done well when he came on. He came on quite early yesterday, so yeah. I think shift him into 13.
Well, the other way of looking at that as well is I don't know how far Lewis Leiner is. I would like to see Lewis Leiner back on the wing in Kevin Murley's boots whilst he's with England, but if he's not quite ready yet, you can have Beard on the wing and throw Lenny in at 13. I think that'd be pretty tasty.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good point. I think Lorde will be at 8. Yeah, the balance of the back row for me was excellent. I thought Webb was just phenomenal as usual, and I really like the balance with him and Dino at 6 and 7. I thought that worked brilliantly.
Yeah, I loved Lamb at 6. I thought he was brilliant in the lineup. But did you also notice he was packing down in the row and Steph was scrummaging at 6?
I didn't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah, no, that's how they did it. They may as well have changed the numbers on the back of the shirt. I don't know if that's kind of mind games with the opposition or just a confidence thing. Steph is our number 4. Let him wear number 4. But yeah, Steph was scrummaging at 6. Probably good for his joints and recovery from injury. I'm sure he's still trying to reserve his tank as much as possible. I'm sure you probably exert more energy in the second row than you do at 6 when you're scrummaging, don't you? So good to see a little bit of mind games or a bit of manipulation of the shirts going on.
But yeah, I'd have, Lorde at 8, Dino at 6, 7, and then, yeah, the backs, we'll just see. We'll see who's fit. We'll see who's available.
Hooker is kind of like heady. Shut your eyes, put your hand in the hat and pull out a name. Pretty much, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Head and Musk seems to be the front runners in terms of the duo. One or the other will be starting, the other will be on the bench. Not really particular about who.
No, I'd imagine that'd be the case. And we're still there, aren't we? We're still Marla, we're still Danny, we're still Andre. We'll be fine. We'll have a very good side. We might have a couple back and we're going to have a big day out at Brentford. I'm looking forward to it, actually.
And they're only missing Hassel Collins from their squad from an England call-up perspective. Their scrum half, White, has obviously been called up to the Scotland squad. Again, I think it's a similar situation to Italy where he's probably going to be available for this window. So they've not lost too many, but again, feeling confident. We like going down to the Brentford Community Stadium or whatever it's called these days, G-Tech Community Stadium.
G-Tech.
I think it's the Harlequins Community Stadium. So we'll go down, we'll take it over and we'll take 5 points with us.
Hopefully this cold snap's gone and we're all going to be enjoying a proper game of Premiership rugby.
Absolutely. Let's wrap it up here. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the interview with Will Collier. We're very, very excited to keep bringing you some more players throughout the rest of the season. It's something we really enjoy and offers great insight. A big result for the club this weekend. This is really our catalyst now. Keep showing up. Keep bringing the noise. The Stoop was rocking at the weekend. Let's travel well to Irish and come on the Quins.
Massive. Cheers, everyone. Come on, you Quins.